ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 7 of the UI Breakfast Podcast. Today, we have another episode with Kai Davis. He is the outreach consultant who's sharing all kinds of secrets with us. And today, the topic for our episode is podcasting, how you actually use them for your benefit, how do you do outreach, and how you just, you know, nail the whole process. Hey, Kai.
Hey, good to be here.
I'm excited to see you and to listen to what you have to say on podcasting because you're the guru of all gurus.
You flatter me too much. Thank you. I'm excited to drop some knowledge on the listeners and help them with their podcast outreach.
Awesome. So let's get started with, you know, the whys, why everybody should be doing podcasts.
So in my mind, it's always broken down into two categories. When people talk about doing podcasting as a consultant or a product creator, the advice is often, well, you should launch a podcast. You get to interview influencers in your industry. You get to build these relationships. And those are all great points. The problem is it takes a ton of work to launch a podcast, doing the editing, doing the production, recruiting guests. And my thought on it a couple of years ago was, well, what if we flip it around? And instead of focusing on launching a podcast, go on a series of podcasts as a guest, a podcast tour. The benefit in my mind is with a podcast, you get to reach an audience of 50, 500 or 1500 active, engaged listeners, talk to them about your area of expertise, like I'm doing right now, and build up a relationship with them over audio. But you don't need to do all the hard work and heavy lifting of building the podcast, building the audience. You're able to find people who've already built up an audience of your ideal buyer, your dream buyer, and present to them about your area of expertise, a problem you're able to solve, something new in your industry, and through that, teach them about why you're relevant to their business and how you could help them grow. So I think that podcasting makes a ton of sense as a serial guest, maybe even more so than a podcast host, because you're able to pick and choose the specific podcasts across all podcasts that reach your audience and talk about the same topics, the same areas of expertise that you have, and educate these audiences.
Absolutely. There are perks like all over the place because you don't have to do any prep work. You just show up for that. And what are your alternatives? You can do guest posting, but you know, putting together a guest post, it's an incredible amount of work, like a day or two. And here mm-hmm. you just need 1 hour and somebody else handles the production even.
Exactly. And it ends up being valuable for everyone. For you as the guest, you get to cement your authority and expertise. If you've been on 10 podcasts to talk about, say, recurring revenue and how to add recurring revenue to your business, well, you have a platform that shows you're an expert about recurring revenue. For the host, they get to have an expert and an authority on their show. And for the guests, they get to learn something new. And if you're a repeat guest across multiple podcasts, then you're able to talk about the same topic multiple times. I always advocate for my clients to have 3 to 5 pitches that they reuse in their outreach to different podcasts because it makes it easier for you as the guest to pitch saying, here's 5 things I could talk about. And here's a link to an episode where I talked about it before if you want to learn what I'm going to be educating your audience about. And it makes it easy for you as the guest because it's not like, ah, gosh, I have to think of something new to talk about. It's, okay, great. I'm going to go on and talk about outreach, or I'm going to talk about how to make more money as a consultant. You have your stock pitches and stock topics, and you're able to repeatedly talk about them, getting better at presenting about them, and not having to do that heavy lifting of, oh, shucks, I have another podcast coming up. I need to think of a new topic.
Amazing. I love this idea. It never actually occurred to me that you can actually have like a portfolio of topics to talk about. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, very interesting. Thank you for opening my eyes, literally.
And yeah, I think it makes it super easy when it comes to, and we could get into the pitching aspects in a little bit, but having a portfolio of topics makes it easy for you to pitch and easy for you to be known about a certain area of expertise or a certain topic. Because if you're going on, like I look at my podcasting history and there's really only 3 or 4 things I talk about across different podcasts, how to get more traffic to your website, why you don't need SEO, why you need outreach, how to make more money as a consultant and how to build up a successful consulting business. And if we look at the probably 50 or 60 podcasts I've done over the last year and a half, each one of those neatly falls into one of those buckets. So it's easy for me as the guest to pitch a host and say, hey, I've done 3 episodes about this topic. I'm really good about talking about this. And I know I could teach your audience something about this topic. So for the host, it's a no-brainer decision. They're able to say, oh, great, you've proven you're able to talk about this. Let's have you on to talk about this. Almost like somebody going on a book tour or a talking head on a news show. They're showing up to give their standard patter and their standard speech, but it's valuable for the audience that they're presenting to, just like the same topic reused across multiple podcasts is valuable for each audience.
This is a great recipe. I'm thrilled, seriously. However, here you get to talk about more topics that you usually do, right?
Oh, of course. I love it.
Yeah, this is something you've been trying to do here so that we try to pull out as much knowledge as we can out of Kai so mm-hmm. that he shares everything.
We're leaving me drained on the floor.
Right, right. And, you know, I know those episodes, they're kind of coming to the end, and I need to use any opportunity to do that.
But yeah, as far as the why of podcasting, I think it's the comparison I always use is if we go back 20 or 30 years and you're a consultant or you have a product that you're trying to sell, you could do direct sales, you could show up, you could present to an audience of 50 or 60 business owners in your community. And maybe you get to do that 3 or 4 times, but then you've reached everybody you can in your community. With podcasting, it's like you're able to present to that audience of dream buyers, but it's a limitless number. If we pick any real vertical, be it e-commerce or consulting or building an online business or running a SaaS or creating a product, there's dozens, there's hundreds of podcasts out there where you're able to reach, even if it's just 50 or 100 people, there are 50 or 100 potential buyers who match up with what you're looking to sell or what you're looking to teach. And it gives you so much more leverage than we'd have in the past just going to a couple trade shows or a couple conferences.
Absolutely. By the way, let's talk over, you know, the benefits of the audio format, because it's very unusual, quite mm-hmm. quirky, because you don't really get the exposure of people who read like blogs, for example. And someone mentioned lately that it's a zero-sum game because a person only has so much time to spend listening to podcasts. So actually, chances of getting into his or her ears are not very high. However, once you do get there, it is 100% amazing. So you get the full exposure, you get like a whole hour of their undivided time and attention, and you just can, you know, shine all kinds of, you know, your personality sides there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That when you're in the ears of the listener, you have their undivided attention. You're the star of their life and of the episode for an hour. So you get that opportunity to present and teach to them. I would say, I don't think it is a zero-sum game. Like, there is a limited amount of time, and I definitely suffer from like, okay, there's a 20 podcasts I'm subscribed to on my phone, and maybe I listen to 2 or 3 each week because I don't have enough time. But if you're a guest on a podcast, you might, like, after this episode, I'm going to send a link out to my audience and tweet about it and send it to my email list. Maybe 5% or 10% of those people will actually listen to the episode, but my entire audience is going to be exposed to it and see, oh, Kai was on this podcast with Jane and they talked about this topic. Even just that ping, just saying like, oh, hey, Kai talked about outreach marketing and outreach consulting on this episode, that reinforces the idea of me being an expert in this domain. And so for anybody who's on podcasts, even if your audience isn't listening to it, if they're time crunched and can't dive into the episode, just having it as a marketing asset, like a white paper or an interview, you're able to share it with them and cement your position as an authority or continue to cement that position as an authority.
True. So true. And, you know, this is even more true for those who host their podcasts, because this is a very time consuming game. And since you're kind of not expanding your audience, you're just giving this new content to your own audience. This is more in a long term game of credibility and, you know, authority.
100%. And I think that's one of the major benefits of podcasting, that it lets you put your metaphorical flag in the ground and say, this is what I'm an expert about. This is what I know. These are the problems I could solve. And reusing topics across podcasts lets you reinforce that. If you're on, again, if you're on 10 podcasts talking about how to make more money as a consultant, people start to see you as the go-to person for that problem or that question. Similarly, if you're, oh, please.
And that's exactly what we're aiming for, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's very clear that the why is obvious. It's a low time investment, very high result,
mm-hmm.
and it's relatively easy as opposed to guest posting, let's say, and the quality of the outreach is really great. I mean, the quality of communication with someone who's listening.
Absolutely.
So we're done with the why, and let's start with the how. How do you actually land those appearances? First, I'm going to break all the stereotypes that people are going to come to you. This is not true. If you want to appear somewhere, just go there and pitch, right?
Yep.
And how do we do that? How do we put together that perfect outreach letter to an influencer who runs a podcast?
So I think the first question that you need to ask yourself when you say, well, the first question is, do I want to invest time in podcasting? And if the answer is yes, great. If the answer is no, that's also great. Like you as a consultant or a product owner have a limited amount of time. So go into this intentionally, like saying, well, do I want to try audio interviews? Do I want to try this as a marketing channel? Do I want to invest 2 or 3 months in testing this? If the answer is yes, wonderful. The next question you need to ask yourself and answer is, what audience am I actually trying to reach? For a specific product, you might have 2 or 3 potential audiences of buyers who you want to reach. If you just focus on one audience at a time, just niching down and saying, these are the people I'm trying to reach, people who are thinking about creating their first SaaS app and trying to get it off the ground. Well, that makes it so much easier to identify podcasts you want to appear on and identify relevant topics to pitch on. Once you've selected your audience, the next step I say is to identify those relevant topics that you want to pitch on, the impactful stories you could tell. And there's a couple different ways you could go about doing that that make it really, really easy. Clients of mine, friends of mine have always struggled to say, well, what exactly do I pitch on? Do I just show up and say like, hey, I'm an outreach consultant or I'm a UX consultant. Please have me on your podcast. And those emails don't do that well. What I found works well is looking at the content you've created previously in either Google Analytics or BuzzSumo to see what's been most shared or what's had the most visitors over the last year. And then looking at your business and saying, well, what exactly is my area of expertise? What is a common problem that I'm really great at solving? And looking at my industry overall, what's a controversial opinion I have that I could share that goes against the grain of the commonly accepted dogma? So for that last one, the controversial opinion, in my case, because I talk about how my clients or customers or listeners can get more traffic, one of my pitches for a podcast is, well, to get more traffic, you don't actually need search engine optimization. What you really need is outreach. And people hear that topic and they're like, that goes against what I usually hear. I'm told, you know, to get more traffic, I need to be investing in SEO. Okay, great. This opinion, because it's counter to what people usually hear, it grabs their attention. So I think the key to pitching is to figure out those impactful stories you're able to tell, looking at the previous content you've created in Google Analytics or BuzzSumo, looking at your area of expertise and figuring out what you could teach a listener just about what you do as a UI designer, an outreach consultant, a marketing consultant, looking at one specific expensive problem you're able to solve well for your clients or customers and figuring out how you could teach that in an episode, or picking that controversial opinion that you hold that goes against the grain of your industry.
Oh, both.
Or both. Yeah. All of them. But from those topics, you're able to distill down 3 to 5 pitches. I really advocate to my clients, you want at most 3 to 5 topic pitches that you're coming to a podcast host with. This gives you a little bit of variety, but it also consolidates it down. So it's easy, like you said, to show up and talk about what it is you're going to talk about. If you have 5 stock pitches, that's 5 conversations you could get experience at having, 5 examples you get experienced at sharing, and it makes it easier for you to pitch, to show up, to talk about what it is that you do, and for your audience to get to know you as the person who, you know, says, you don't need SEO, you need outreach, or let me teach you about how to do outreach marketing and outreach to podcasting. So by having consistent topics you're pitching on, you make it easy for listeners to learn what exactly it is you do. And you also, I think, moving down a step, make it easier for the host to decide to work with you. I handle scheduling a few of my clients on podcasts and scheduling guests for their podcasts. And I see a ton of pitch emails from people that really break down to, hi, I'm a blank. I'd love to be on your podcast. Can I be on your podcast? And I get those emails and I'm like, okay, great. Thank you. Tell me more about why this is valuable to my audience. Like, what are you going to share that's going to be interesting for them? And so when you have these pitch topics, suddenly you're able to approach a host and say, hey, I'd love to teach your audience about topic A, topic B, or topic C. Which of these three topics is the most relevant and interesting to your audience? And so now, almost like when you put together a proposal, you're offering the host a choice of yeses. So they're able to say, okay, I get to pick between option A, option B, or option C, instead of yes or no, do I want to work with this person?
Yeah, I'm guilty as charged because I committed the same mistake. I was smart enough to know that hosts are eager to do some to have something valuable for the audience. So mm-hmm. the value was there, but I was not smart enough to, you know, propose the assortment of features. And I think this is really, really good advice. And it's not on the table. You cannot, I couldn't guess about it.
Sure.
Now we know.
I think it makes it a lot easier for all parties involved, and especially for the host. Like, as somebody who receives these emails on behalf of my clients for like, hey, I want to be on your podcast, the few that rise above and make it so easy to work with are the people who say, your podcast is about X. I'm a blank, and that relates to X. Here are three topics that I could teach your audience about relating to X. And suddenly it's like, oh, you've done your research. And maybe it's only 5 minutes of research to figure that out, but you've done your research, you've put together this pitch, and you're saying A, B, or C, which one? Or let me know a different topic that'd be valuable. So when you show up prepared like that, even with just 5 minutes of preparation, it makes it so much easier to start doing work together.
Absolutely. Plus, there is one situation that I had in my mind. For example, you do exhaust that list of podcasts you want to appear on. Mm-hmm. So let's say half a year later, you want to do a second round of podcast tours. And if your pitch is similar to the first one, like, I'm Jane, I want to appear here, it's not going to be a successful way to pitch yourself. However, if you have a new scope of themes, like, let's say I'm launching a new book with a new topic and here are a couple things that we can talk about here. It makes them good reason to actually invite you for the second time, which I think is going to be like inevitable if you, let's say, go around your friends, for example.
100%. 100%. You're absolutely right in that. It lets you structure the topics compared to like the offering that you're about to launch. So if you're launching a new book, you're absolutely right. Pick three topics from the book and say like, hey, I'm launching a book. Here's three topics from the book. If you'd like to read the sample chapter, let me know. But I'd love to talk about one of these and teach your audience about X. If you're launching a new app, you could pick three problems that your app solves for your customers and say, you know what? We have a product in the work. We've learned these really interesting things about our audience, which lines up with your listening audience. We'd love to come on and teach them, you know, how to solve X or what they need to know about Y or how to teach somebody Z. And you're able to repeatedly approach these podcasts and continue delivering value. Because at the end of the day, I think there's a mismatch in some people's mind about who they're actually pitching or where they need to show the value. I see a lot of outreach emails to podcasts that are talking to the host like, hey, this is why it's valuable for you, dear host, to have me on. That's sort of missing the mark. When you're reaching out to a podcast to have you on as a guest, you want to frame your experience and your value in terms of the value to the audience. The host is almost invisible there. Like, you want to make sure you're referencing them appropriately, that you have their name in the email, but every pitch you have shouldn't be, this is why this is important to you. It should be, this is why this is valuable to your audience, because the host is, in a very positive way, beholden to their audience. They want to have interesting, relevant content for their audience. So if you come in out of the gate and say, here's my topic, here's why it's relevant to your audience, you don't have to have them doing any mental gymnastics to say, okay, they're talking about X. Does my audience care about X? You're already framing it in terms of, this is why this topic is interesting and valuable to your audience, and this is why you should have me on, because it'll teach your audience something new and something exciting.
Let's imagine that the table has been turned around and you want to nail some celebrity for your own podcast. Mm-hmm. How would value prop sound in this regard?
In that case, I think when I've reached out to authorities or influencers or celebrities and said, hey, we'd love to have you on our podcast. Very rarely have I been met with pushback of how big is your audience? What's in it for me? Why should I be on? People like talking about themselves. So I'm not sure if it's that you need a value prop. I think it's more you need to do your research and come to that authority or influencer with topics that they're already knowledgeable about. You don't want to say, hey, come on my podcast. Okay, great. What am I going to talk about? You want to say, hey, come on my podcast. You had these three great articles. I'd love to talk to you further about them. And in terms of how you find out what those pitches could be, I've loved the tool BuzzSumo, because you're just able to drop a URL in there and it'll tell you the most shared content on that domain. So when I've pitched guests to come on a client's podcast, one of my research steps is to say, okay, great, I'm going to go to their blog. I'm just going to drop their blog into BuzzSumo and I see what their most popular content ever has been. Well, great. Because it's been proven this is popular, obviously they know what they're talking about. And I'm able to say, hey, dear guest, I saw that your post on XYZ was incredibly popular, got 1,000 shares on Twitter. I'd love to talk to you more about that topic. If not that, here's two other topics that would be relevant. So I think the most valuable thing to keep in mind when pitching a potential guest for your podcast is coming to the table with topics that they could talk about. So again, it's a no-brainer decision for them. They're able to say, oh, yeah, of course, I love talking about outreach consulting, or I love talking about launching an app. Sure, I'd love to come on. And it's very rare that they'll push back and say like, well, is this the right audience for me? Is this big enough for me? More often they'll say, okay, great. Let me know what the next step is.
Absolutely. So the point is here for both situations to eliminate thinking for someone who you are outreaching to.
Yes.
So that they can say, oh yeah, sure. And you know, the list of topics, you just pick one and all of them actually match the audience.
Absolutely. I think in the end, it comes down to, it doesn't seem like it comes down to this, but it comes down to risk. When you're pitching somebody on having you on their podcast, or you're pitching somebody on coming on your podcast, the more uncertainty you leave in that pitch email, the more open threads you have there, the more risky it feels to them. If you say, hey, Jane, I'd love to have you on my podcast. Let me know if you want to come on. Suddenly in your mind, you're like, what am I going to talk about? I have to prepare. What's a podcast going to be about? Oh, God, this seems risky. I don't want to do it. But if somebody comes to you and says, hey, Jane, I'd love to interview about like the three things a SaaS founder needs to know about UI. Okay, great. They've come to you with a strong pitch. They've obviously know what you know about, and they're making it so you're able to say, oh yeah, I'd love to talk about that. I have, you know, a file folder full of things I could share about that. It's a no-brainer decision at that point, because it's less risky for the person you're pitching, or I guess the person you're pitching in either case.
Absolutely. So one more thing I'd love to ask you about. Mm-hmm. What is the best way to do the research if you want to land an appearance on the podcast? So let's say the minimum is to listen to at least half of an episode, let's say, or an episode. Mm-hmm. But what you can do better than that?
I think you want to listen to half an episode or an episode to get a feel for the show's format. You want to do what I say the bare minimum of research is knowing the podcast host's name, knowing the name of the podcast itself, and having that recent episode of the podcast ideally relevant to your pitch that you're able to share with them. So in your outreach email to them, and we could include a link in the show notes to the outreach email template that I use for my podcast outreach, you're able to show that you know who the host of the podcast is. I've been on the receiving end of so many podcasts where it's dear person, or dear podcast host.
So the similar technique has worked for me when I'm, for example, trying to ask someone for an interview. I would go and see what interviews they gave at podcasts, and I would listen to them, and I would know in advance what kind of angle they have on that topic, you know. And it really gives a background. Plus, it's always nice to mention that, you know, I listened to your interview at Rocket Ship Podcast and was great. Like, let's talk about that and that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if we think about it, that application, looking at the type of interview somebody's done before and pitching them on it, is really that same concept of having 3 to 5 stock pitches you as a guest use when you approach a podcast. Since we're saying, hey, you talked about XYZ before, I'd love to have you on my podcast to talk about that same topic. So there's sort of a bit of symmetry there where somebody's been on a podcast a couple times and becomes known for topic X, well, when you reach out to them, it's easy to say, hey, I see you've given a couple interviews about X. I'd love to have you on my podcast to talk about X. Since even if they've given 100 interviews on that same topic, it's still going to be new to your audience. Like, there might be some audience overlap and they've heard the person before, but that's going to be a minority of the people on the podcast or listening to the podcast. And it's still going to be valuable for them to hear it a second time. That repeat exposure is going to be beneficial. And for the new folks in your audience, they'll be like, oh man, this person is an expert on this. I'm so excited to hear them talk about it. So I think it's valuable to just do that little bit of research and see, what have they talked about before? What topics do they know about? And what can I, you know, grab them and pull them on to talk about?
Yeah, in my old days, I would listen to Amy Hoy speaking anywhere. And, you know, it didn't irritate me that she was repeating herself. By no means. I was just, you know, cementing that knowledge in my head. And that's it.
Yep, absolutely. And I think if you're a person who's frequently going on other podcast episodes as a guest, it'll be the same with your audience. Like, your audience subscribes to your newsletter or reads your blog because you talk about, I mean, at the end of the day, you talk about like the same thing, multiple aspects of it, but you have that same topic or same theme running through your writing. Same with your speaking or interviews. If it's 3 or 5 different topics, your audience is going to be like, oh, great. I love it when I hear Jane talk about this. I'm definitely listening to this episode. Or I love it when I hear Kai talk about that topic. I'm going to listen to that episode. Or they'll say, eh, that's not one of the topics that really lights me up. So I'm just going to skip that episode.
And this brings us back to the key rule of actual authority building for anyone. You do not want to be afraid to repeat yourself, mm-hmm. like all over the place, because that is how you get known.
Yep. I mean, like we could look at somebody like Brennan Dunn, and he very much is cemented in, I will teach you, dear freelancer, how to charge more money and get more clients. And everything he talks about, everything he writes about comes down to those two topics. But it's invaluable for him because when somebody thinks, oh, how do I make more money as a freelancer? They might ask that question to a friend and the friend says, you know, go check out Double Your Freelancing Rate. It'll teach you how to make more money as a freelancer. So being consistent in your topics and what you present yourself as an authority on makes it so easy for your audience to know, oh, this is the go-to person for that topic. I'm going to think of them or recommend them to people when they have questions about the topic.
Absolutely. By the way, trying to revise our process. So we pick the audience, mm-hmm. then we define the list of podcasts. At this stage, I have a clarification question. Mm-hmm. What is the best source for finding, you know, the proper podcast and the topic? Because, you know, iTunes search is not a perfect tool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really, really good question. iTunes search is like, I don't want to insult iTunes too much since we'll be hosted there, but
it's not perfect.
It's not perfect. It could be better, no. But there's a couple different strategies. So number one, obviously, like you could search in iTunes for a keyword or a topic and you find a couple podcasts or podcast episodes that talk about the topic. The second strategy I like is just doing a Google search. And I have a little Google search snippet I'll share with you to include in the show notes for people to hunt down episodes. So it's just a search query I've put together that makes it easy to search for pages or podcasts that have like podcast in the title or the episode URL or the page description and a specific word. So if you want to find podcast episodes that are about, let's say, freelancing, you're able to use a snippet, drop in whatever word or phrase you want, and just get back a list of Google results of podcast episodes or podcast shows that talk about that topic. So that's...
Oh, this is smart. We're looking forward to this.
It's a really, really cool strategy since basically you're able to look at the marketplace of all podcasts out there that are indexed by Google and say, okay, great. Which episodes relate to the topic I want to talk about? So I might search for SEO or another related keyword and be able to say, okay, great. Here's a list of 20 different podcasts that I could approach. They've already had an episode about this topic. So more likely than not, they'd like to have a second person on to talk about it. The third strategy I really like is picking a similar authority to you in your niche, in your area of expertise, and following them around. So let's pick on two people, Brennan Dunn and Nathan Barry. They have slightly similar, slightly dissimilar audiences, but Brennan Dunn is writing about how to be a better freelancer. Nathan Barry is writing about how to publish a book, how to build your authority online. So there's a little bit of overlap in the type of people they're trying to reach, consultants, freelancers, people trying to establish themselves in their expertise. So for Brennan, we might say, okay, podcasts that Nathan's been on, they're more likely than not podcasts that would be valuable for us to get in touch with. So whatever your industry, whatever your area of expertise, picking one, two, or three similar people to you, or people one or two levels above you, and saying, what podcasts have they been on? Let's build a list of those podcasts. Okay, great. That's now my pitch list. Those become the podcasts I'm going to reach out to and say, hey, I'd love to be on. You just interviewed Nathan on this topic. I have a controversial opinion that disagrees with him, or I have something else on a similar topic I could teach your audience. So let's make this work. So those are the three strategies that I've used the most: searching in iTunes and just building up those lists of podcasts, searching in Google by topic to find podcasts related to that topic, and following another expert or authority around online and seeing which podcast they're on, and then following their trail, saying if they've been on that podcast, great, let's go on that podcast ourselves.
I love the last one most of all, but I have a little addition. There are some podcast listings, let's say best freelancing podcasts or best bootstrap podcasts. So you can use some of those too. However, following an authority is just clearly better.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any one right way to do it. Whichever way you do it, if it gets you a list of 10 or 20 podcasts to reach out to, great. Like you're ahead of the game. You know who you're trying to reach. And start reaching out to them. What I found is when it comes to actually reaching out to them, persistence and follow-up is key. You can't just think about sending one email and seeing what happens. And if they don't respond, give up. You need to assume that they're a busy person and busy people value their time and need follow-up for you to actually make contact with them and demonstrate that you are relevant and important and a valuable resource for them. So whenever I'm pitching a podcast for myself or pitching a podcast on behalf of a client, I'll say, okay, great. I'm going to plan out the first five emails I send. And if I never hear back from them on the first email, I already know what the second email is going to be. I know what the third email is going to be and the fourth email. And so it's easy for me to pitch because I'm able to send that first email, wait a week. And if I don't hear back, immediately send that second email. And I generally structure those emails, an initial pitch email that we'll be sharing in the show notes, talking about the topics we could talk about. The second email might say something like, hey, great. I just wanted to share this recent episode I was on the UI Breakfast podcast talking about outreach consulting. Take a listen. Third email might do something similar saying, hey, you know what? I just published this great article that I think your audience would love to know about. Happy to come on your an episode of your podcast and talk about it. Fourth email might say something like, I haven't heard back from you yet. Any questions I can answer for you? Just so you're being persistent and following up and making sure that if they've gone on vacation, if they've been really busy with a product launch, if they are just snowed in their inbox, you're giving them multiple chances over multiple weeks to see your email and respond to you.
You know, you're just opening a whole new world to me because, you know, following up on that first email for me already means, you know, biting my lip and stepping over my pride and, you know, doing something to follow up. However, following up in five emails whenever someone is not getting back to me, it's something totally unimaginable, like totally. So it's a whole new world for me right now.
A beautiful new world.
Yeah, I imagine, and you know, I'm not like a total newbie in outreach. And I imagine for someone who has never done that before, that would be quite an important piece of advice.
It's really important. And I think it comes down to whether you internally in your heart believe that a lack of response means a no, or a lack of response means they're busy and just haven't had a chance to get back to you yet. So I've very much internalized the belief that if I email somebody and I don't hear back from them, it's not that they hate me or they want to say no but haven't been able to say no. I internalize it as they're busy. Maybe they've been on vacation. Maybe their pet just died. Maybe who knows what. They're taking a week off of email. So the considerate thing I could do is to send that email a week later and say, hey, you know what? Following up, just wanted to check in. Love to come on your podcast. Love that most recent episode. It was really great. Here's the three topics I could talk about with you. And just doing that persistently and politely until one of three things happens. You get a yes. You get a firm no that says, hey, you know what? You don't have a big enough audience for us, or the topics you're pitching don't line up with our podcast. Sorry. Or you just get to the point where you've sent 10 emails and you've never heard back from them. And you're like, okay, obviously this is a dead end. I'll put them to the side and maybe I'll contact them again in a couple months. But for now, we're just going to close the book on them. So by persistently following up, you're just giving the people you're reaching out to multiple chances to say yes to you. And you're demonstrating your commitment, and you're hopefully taking yourself in their minds from, who's this person emailing me? I've never heard of them, to, man, who is this person I keep hearing about? I need to have them on my podcast. I need to learn more about them.
Do you have any smart, you know, automation tool that you would use for that? Is that still Quickmail?
There's a couple different tools I use for that. One is Quickmail. It's a great outreach tool that we talked about on our last episode. So the benefit with Quickmail is you could define that sequence of emails and say, okay, great, like, email number one is always going to be, hi, first name, I'd love to come on, podcast name, and then it'll fill in the variables for you. And your job is now identify podcasts, identify the relevant information, or have an assistant do that for you. Drop that spreadsheet into Quickmail, and Quickmail will just start sending those emails for you. And once somebody responds with a yes or a no, it'll stop that sequence and you're able to start engaging with that person yourself. Another tool I really like is Streak. It's a CRM that's a Gmail add-on. And I like this just because it helps me organize my conversations and the podcasts I'm in touch with. And I've used it both for direct first-person outreach before I started using Quickmail, and now I use it to manage the conversations in addition to Quickmail. Once they respond back, I could tag somebody as saying, like, oh, they're from the UI Beckrest podcast, and just monitor that conversation. The benefit of something like Streak is it has a snooze email feature. So I could send an email and then say, okay, great. If nobody responds to this email, bring this email back to the top of my inbox in a day, a week, a month, 6 months, whatever time frame I want. And so it makes it really easy to follow up once we start getting into that conversation. So we might be emailing, the person might say, I'd love to have you on. We're booked right now and I'm about to go on vacation. Get in touch with me in a month. And so I'm able to say, okay, great. Snooze this email for 4 weeks. And then 4 weeks later, the email pops up and I'm able to say, hey, just following up. Love to come on the podcast like we discussed. So another tool that does a snooze feature similar to that is Boomerang for Gmail. And HubSpot has a similar tool, but I can't remember its name. I'm a heavy Gmail user, so most of the tools I recommend plug into Gmail or use Gmail in some way.
That's great. I feel like my email process is like, you know, riding a horse in medieval age as opposed to taking a rocket ship to the sky with your tools.
And you definitely don't need to, or a listener doesn't need to use any or all of the tools I'm recommending. Like, the bare bones minimum approach, if you want to get on a podcast, is send an email to the podcast host, list a couple topics that you could talk about, and say, like, have a clear call to action. Like, hey, if these topics sound good, reply back and just let me know which one you want, and we could figure out scheduling next. So just doing that is going to put you so far ahead of the people who say, I'd love to be on podcasts, but, and then they do nothing.
Yeah, who's going to invite you? Well, they're not going to, you know, scour the internet in search of young and, you know, prospects who give hope, like,
right.
Uprising bloggers. They're not going to do that.
Exactly. And what I found through outreach to podcasts is podcasts are hungry for content and hungry for experts and authorities to come on and teach their audience something new. If we think about it, if you have a weekly podcast and you want to interview somebody new on every episode, that's 50 or so guests you need in a year. You might be able to think of 10 or 20 people to invite on immediately, but that gets you, what, 5 months into the podcast, and suddenly you're like, oh, geez, I need a guest. Who do I get in touch with? If you as a podcast guest are emailing people and saying, hey, I'd love to come on, this is something I could teach your audience about, you're making it so easy for that podcast host to say, oh, great, we needed a guest next week. Let's have this person on. Perfect. We're set. And they've told me what topics they could talk about. I'll pick topic A and we're ready to go.
Absolutely. I think the topic for our next episode is going to be the structure of a perfect outreach email or any kind of email. So ready to talk about that?
Oh, I'm excited.
That's great. Because I think for the podcast process, we pretty much nailed it. So let me recap a little bit. First, we pick the audience. Then we compile a list of podcasts, and the few approaches you can use here is either do an iTunes search, then you can search Google for a certain keyword, you can follow some authority, or you can use podcast listings. Then you put together an email. You do research for each person, mm-hmm. like you do put together a podcast email, the host name, host contact. The strategy here is very similar to cold outreach that we did before, right?
Absolutely.
And then the main thing is you follow up.
Yep. The one topic that that we missed there in that recap is just choosing your topics that you're talking about. And you mm-hmm. just do that by looking at your most popular content or picking something interesting about your area of expertise, outreach consulting, a controversial opinion you might hold, or a common problem you solve for your clients or customers. And that becomes the core of your pitch email.
Yeah. So you pick like 3 to 5 topics, and this is going to be your value proposition. And you are trying to serve the audience of the podcaster, not the podcaster himself. That's important.
Absolutely. Yeah. You always want to frame everything in terms of this is why it's valuable for your audience, and this is what they'll learn from it.
Right. So what is a typical, you know, conversion rate you can expect? Like how many people would get back out of 10 you pitch?
4 to 6.
This is really good.
I've been amazed at how high of a conversion rate or high of a response rate outreach to podcasts can generate. And I think it's partly because, as I said earlier, podcasters are hungry for content or hungry for relevant authorities to come on their show. So you as an, if you're starting out with podcast guesting, you might be pitching smaller shows at first that don't have a large audience, and that's okay. It's going to, you know, get your feet wet, get you comfortable with the process of podcasting, make it easier for you to go through the motions. And as you start building up that, let's say, arsenal of podcasts you've been on before, suddenly you're able to go to the next level. And the next level, when you say, oh, great, I've been on, you know, 10 podcasts to talk about this topic, let me pitch a podcast that's a little larger and see if they respond to my outreach. If they do, wonderful, you've leveled up. If they don't, okay, great, keep on doing what you're doing. And in another month, try outreach to similarly sized next level up podcasts. But just by being consistent and stacking the bricks, getting used to the process of going on these podcasts, you start setting yourself up as an authority. And the great thing is when people see you on enough podcasts and start reaching out to you and they say, hey, you know what? I saw you talk about value-based pricing on the Value-Based Show. I'd love to have you on to talk about the same topic. And when you hit that point, suddenly it's almost a snowball effect. The more podcasts you do, the more podcasts you're invited on, and the more podcasts you're invited on, the more of an authority you're recognized as in your industry.
Right. And, you know, in outreach, the sky is virtually the limit. We don't realize how many circles there are in the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, and you, it might seem that you kind of exhausted your nearest network of people. However, there are thousands of people who follow a completely different set of authorities. Like, let's say me and Kai, we are obviously in the same circle. We, you know, we have the same idols and the same people who follow. However, like, you go to another conference and you discover people who have no clue what productized consulting is, people who have no clue about our format, people have no clue about, you know, our rules of life. Absolutely. And you should totally reach out to them, especially if you have a product to sell.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's, and I think it comes back again to that idea of, well, which audience do you want to pitch? I've worked with clients before who have SaaS products, and we say, okay, there's 4 core audiences that we're marketing to in your overall marketing plan. We're going to pick one. We're going to pursue that audience for 3 months with podcasts, and we're going to get placements. And at the end of those 3 months, we might say, okay, great. We've started exhausting our options here. Let's move on to audience number 2, because audience number 2 will have a completely different set of podcasts that they listen to, sites they engage with, influencers that they listen to. And so just by starting with audience first and saying, well, this is the position, this is the audience we're going to go after, you're able to pick the relevant topics, find those podcasts, and then start landing those podcast appearances. So as you add new audiences, as you identify new audiences that are relevant to your business, it becomes really easy to just start stacking more and more audiences on there and say, okay, we've capped out with this audience. Let's move on to audience 2 now. Let's move on to audience 3 now.
I think we actually skipped a few steps, a few important ones. The first one is how you handle your appearance while you're on the podcast, what call to action you add in the end, mm-hmm. because you definitely should. Mm-hmm. That's the first one. And the second one, how do you promote the episode? Mm-hmm. So let's talk about these two.
Absolutely. So in terms of the call to action at the end of the episode, I think that's the most valuable part of the episode itself. So here's why it's valuable. When you're listening to somebody on a podcast, or when you're appearing on a podcast, you have that temporary star power. You're appearing as an equal of the host. You're being interviewed as an authority. And so the people listening to the episode get this massive dump of like why you're an expert, why you're interesting. And when the episode ends, you're presented with that option to tell them what to do next. And a lot of the times when you're listening to a podcast, the host will say, well, where can somebody find more information out about you? And the host said, or the guest says something like, you could follow me at Twitter or you could visit my website. And those are
That's it. That's a dead end.
Yeah, it doesn't like you might get a couple Twitter followers through it if they use Twitter. You might get a couple visitors to your website, but it doesn't provide, it doesn't continue to provide value. So what I found is the most successful approach is to connect your call to action with a topic you're speaking about on the episode. So if I'm on an episode of a podcast talking about freelancing and how to, you know, grow a freelancing business, I'll have my call to action be something like, hey, visit wyouraudience.com/podcast name, and you could download 3 worksheets I put together about how to have a more successful freelance business. So the audience just heard you talking about growing a freelance business for the last 30 minutes. They're presented with a call to action that follows that thread that says, if you want to learn more about this topic, go here. And then there's a specific URL for them to visit. Like in our case, we're saying, hey, go to wyouraudience.com/UI and you could download some free resources that Kai put together for listeners of this episode.
There really are some episodes, some resources. Come on, check it out.
Amazing resources. But when you have a clear call to action like that, it's a direct, clear next step for the audience to take. So I think it's very valuable to just have one clear call to action for an audience or for a listener to take, sort of like in an email. If you're sending an email to somebody and you're like, here are 3 next things for you to do, they're going to say, these are too many things. I'm freaking out. I'm going to delete this email. Likewise, if it's a podcast listener and you're like, okay, go to this URL and sign up and follow me on Twitter and visit my homepage and go to this thing over here, they're going to go like, oh no, this is too much. Episode deleted. I'm done. So by having one clear call to action that takes them ideally to a landing page that speaks directly to that audience and says, like in the case for the UI Breakfast landing page I put together, hey, UI Breakfast podcast listeners, here are some bonuses I put together for you. It speaks directly to them. It attaches itself to the topic that you're talking about on the episode. And it makes it really easy for that person listening to the episode to say, okay, yeah, I want to learn more about this. I'm going to go to this URL. Oh, cool. These bonuses look like they're valuable to me. I'm going to enter my email address. And now we've taken somebody who's a listener of a podcast episode, provided them with additional value, and converted them to being a member of your audience. So it's a really, really convenient way to convert that person and capture them as somebody who's ready to hear what you have to say and continue receiving your marketing messages. So that's how I think of call to actions at the end of an episode. You want to make it relevant to the audience. You want to make sure it continues to deliver value, and you want to make sure you just have one clear call to action for them to take.
You need to make sure you have some call to action, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it sounds kind of easy. However, I see so many guests on the podcast who don't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. In my experience, putting together a dedicated landing page is like super powerful, but it's also super time consuming, I think. Well, it's not super time consuming, but it certainly is because you never have enough time to do that. However, you can go as easy as having a single versatile email course, free email course, for example, mm-hmm. that you use to capture everything on your website. So you can totally, you know, point people towards that. It's much better than just pointing them towards your landing page, which is not going to lead them anywhere.
Absolutely. Our mutual friend, Philip Morgan, registered the domain positioningcrashcourse.com. And mm-hmm. it takes the visitor, once you visit that, to his free crash course on using positioning in your business. And so he's able to have a really clear call to action in every podcast he's on, which is, if you want to learn more about this, visit positioningcrashcourse.com. And it's a super memorable URL. It's easy for people to be like, if I want to learn more, I go to positioningcrashcourse.com. And once they're there, they're able to sign up. So he's taken a slightly different approach to it, where I favor the individualized landing pages for each episode. It lets me track, you know, which podcasts are generating the most subscribers for me, which podcasts are getting the most visitors. He said, I'm just going to have a landing page set up for my free course and drive people there. And it's been incredibly valuable for him. He's been able to grow his list by 10x over the last year just by having this one clear call to action for people, having this free email course put together. They visit the URL, they're able to sign up, they're able to get 6 lessons, and now they've been educated even further about why Philip's area of expertise is relevant to their business. And now they're, you know, a lead or a prospect for buying his product.
Right. So the point with CTA, it should exist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the more qualified it is, the better. So work your best to make it qualified and targeted. However, any kind of CTA would be just much better than no CTA.
Absolutely.
So Twitter handle is the worst you can get.
Twitter.
However, in my life, Twitter has been a very powerful conversion engine because I have in my Twitter description, I have something like sign up for my free course, and I have, instead of my, you know, uibreakfast.com, I have uibreakfast.com/coefficiency, let's say. Mm-hmm. And that's how I get plenty of subscribers area of engine, because Twitter is more powerful than thing.
That's wonderful.
However, it's still not good. It's still, Twitter handle is really, really helpless.
It really, it's hard to remember. Sometimes you might have a weird spelling in there. And in your case, when you have that page already set up with your free course, I think just giving that free course URL is a very, very powerful step you could take. Just ending the episode with that call to action of like, if you want to learn more about this, visit uibreakfast.com/coefficiency. And boom, they're able to go to a landing page that outlines the value you're going to deliver to them, what you're going to teach them. And again, has that single call to action of, if this is valuable to you, drop your email in here. And people are able to easily know like what that next step is. Again, it reduces risk and uncertainty in the visitor's mind. They don't have to say, which of these 6 things am I supposed to do? They're able to say, there is one thing, it is clearly called out, I am going to do that one thing, and then they move forward in that process.
Right. So once that episode is live, what can you do to maximize the impact of it to your audience, to the cross audience? How do you promote it?
I promote it. There's a bunch of different ways to promote it. Let me cover what I typically do and then different options. And I've written a bit about this on my website at doubleyouraudience.com/content-promotion-checklist. I just go through the different steps I use when I have a new article or a new podcast episode out to help promote it. What I typically do for a podcast episode is I will tweet about it, and I use the tool Meet Edgar, where I can have a library of content that's reused and retweeted through my Twitter account. So I'll add it to Meet Edgar. So every month or so, each episode is tweeted out at the appropriate time. I'll email my list and say, hey, I was just on this podcast and here's why it's super awesome, interesting. You should check it out. I'll send that as like a one-off broadcast email to everybody, but I'll also add that email to my educational newsletter sequence. So when somebody's on my list, they might get my free course, and then I want to make sure I'm still delivering valuable content to them. So I'll have an email go out every week that's like, hey, I just wrote this article, you should check it out. Or, hey, I was just on this podcast episode, you should check it out. Even if that podcast episode was a year or 2 years ago, it's still going to be valuable to them. So I make sure that everybody who signs up to my newsletter slowly and persistently is exposed to, oh, here's another episode Kai was on to talk about that thing he does. So adding it to the newsletter is a great way to make sure you're exposing it to everybody who signs up to your list through any different channel. Outside of that, I found that sites like Hacker News, Product Hunt, Reddit, different social community sites can be a great way to get interest in the podcast episode. I haven't experimented a lot with them, but I've had friends who have had a lot of success getting visitors to a podcast episode by utilizing these community sites. So typically that's how I'll promote a podcast episode that I'm on. I'll tweet about it. I'll share it with my list. I'll add it to my autoresponder, and I might share it with relevant communities that I'm part of. How about you? When you're on an episode, how do you promote it?
I think you just covered everything possible. So mine is inclusive. I do tweet. I'm working on adding things to my Meet Edgar account. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly sending an update to my list. And, you know, sending things to my list is like the greatest pleasure of my life. Mm-hmm. You know, every birthday I sit down and mail my list.
Perfect.
Because I think, you know, I have a list. Why can I not tell them I have a birthday today?
Exactly.
And, you know, podcast episode is a perfect way to keep in touch with them.
Yep, yep. Well, one strategy I haven't experimented with a lot yet, but I really want to, is when I'm on a podcast, purchasing targeted Facebook advertising traffic for that podcast episode itself. So go into Facebook and say, okay, great, I'm going to set a budget of $50. I'm just going to target people who either have liked the host's podcast page or who are interested in, you know, one of the topics or are following me on Facebook, and just run a small ad that's like, you want to learn more about X? Check out this podcast episode, and pay on a price, on a cost per click basis, just as a way to drive new traffic to that podcast episode and expose it to a new, potentially larger audience. It's an idea that's been in the back of my head for around a year now. I just haven't had the time to put together that first test campaign, but it strikes me as a really valuable way to give a burst of traffic to a podcast episode page and also make it more valuable to the host. If you go up to the host afterwards and you're like, oh, by the way, I'm going to run a small Facebook ad campaign and just drive some visitors to this episode, you should see a little bump in traffic. The host is going to be like, oh my God, what? You're doing that? You're amazing.
He's gonna look for some hidden cost there.
Exactly. But it's a really valuable way to get more people listening to your episode, bring more people in and expose them to relevant content, and help the host out and make you appear more valuable as a guest, because you're taking advantage of this idea of reciprocity. You're giving something without expecting anything in return, and that's going to make the host more likely to reciprocate to you. And when it comes to that reciprocation, one aspect we didn't cover earlier on strategies to get on podcasts that I just want to close with is, at the end of a podcast episode, I very often will ask the host over the Skype call or through email to say, hey, can you think of two or three podcasts in your niche that I'd be a valuable guest on, or I'd be able to teach something interesting to their audience? And more often than not, maybe 50% of the time, the host will respond back and say like, oh yeah, here are two podcasts I could think of. And if they respond back with that, I'll say, that's wonderful. Would you be willing to send a short introduction email? Here, I've included one below that you could just copy and paste. And the email is usually something like, hey, this is Kai. He was just on my podcast to talk about X. I think he'd be a wonderful addition to your podcast. I've CC'd Kai on this email, and he'll take it from here. It makes it really easy for the host to do that introduction for you. And suddenly you don't have to go out there and pitch that podcast. You've been introduced to them by one of their colleagues. So you're already coming into that discussion with a bit of a boost or a bit of social proof. Oh, this podcast host is willing to introduce Kai, so he must be legitimate. He must be valuable for me to have on. So just making that small ask at the end of the episode can be a very, very valuable way to get an introduction to other episodes, other podcasts in your niche. And the worst case scenario is the host says, I can't think of anybody. And that doesn't really matter. That's sort of the same situation as not asking. But by putting yourself out there and asking at least once, the 10% of the time, the 50% of the time where they say, hey, yeah, I could think of somebody, here, I'll introduce you, it pays off in spades for the price of a single email or a single question.
You know, this tactic is great. However, you know, asking for introductions is somewhere a little below my ethical, my personal comfort threshold, like, let's say. Mm-hmm. So I can easily imagine that most of our listeners won't feel comfortable doing that. Mm-hmm. However, from what I learned from you over these episodes, getting over that comfort threshold or raising the bar, it really will make wonders to your outreach process.
Absolutely. It does come down to, in a lot of senses, everything we've talked about these episodes comes down to the strength of your ego, in a sense. Like, to be comfortable with cold outreach, to be comfortable emailing strangers and saying like, here's how I could provide value to your business, or emailing podcasts and saying, hey, here's what I could teach your audience. You have to accept that you are an authority and you are an expert and you have valuable information to share. If you haven't made that mind shift, if you, dear listener, are thinking, this sounds great, but you know, I don't have anything valuable to share, or I'm not an expert, you've already, in a sense, lost. You need to accept that you have something interesting and something valuable and something captivating to share with these audiences. And once you make that shift, it becomes a lot easier to say, well, I'm not asking necessarily for my benefit, even though it might benefit me. I'm asking because there's people out there who will benefit from learning from what I have to share. So by not asking, I'm doing these audiences a disservice.
Right. I love that. Mm-hmm. Such a nice justification.
Mm-hmm. It gets me through the day.
Anything. Yes, anything to make you more comfortable there.
but it definitely is scary to do the first time, just like it's scary to do the first time you email a podcast and say, I'd love to be on as a guest, or the first time you're actually on a podcast as a guest. But the more times you do it, the easier it is for you to do. And the easier it is to make that ask at the end of an episode and say, you know what, I've loved being on this episode. I'm sure you know a couple other podcasters. Can you think of one that I'd be a great fit for? And sometimes they'll say, oh yeah, definitely. Let me introduce you. And sometimes they say, oh no, I don't. What I often do to lead into that is to say, you know, I've loved being on this episode. I'm just curious. Can you tell me just briefly who your ideal guest is? I want to see if I have anybody in my network who would make a good match for you. So again, we're taking advantage of that idea of reciprocity. We're leading off by saying, I want to provide value to you. I want to introduce you to someone I know who would be a good fit. And once the host has said, oh yeah, this is who my ideal guest is. And you're able to say, great, I know two or three people. I'll send a short email summarizing it. Then you're able to move into, by the way, can you think of any podcasts I'd be a good fit for? So it feels like a good match. Plus, we aren't asking for anything before we've provided value.
Absolutely. And I want to share a small hack. If you have some kind of personal network, you can avoid completely cold outreach and kind of filter those candidates that you really know have met at a conference or something. Like my latest podcast pitches have been relevant to the people who I know. So it's kind of semi-warm, or actually very warm outreach. Mm-hmm. It's still an outreach email. However, it really is more comfortable to practice on those who you know. And it also really, really, really boosts the get back rate.
Yes.
Because it's nearly 100%. If you do like semi-warm, it's almost 100% going to land.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. When you're getting started or at any point in your outreach career or podcasting career, if you have a friend or a colleague or an associate or somebody you met at a conference who has a podcast, reaching out to them and saying like, hey, you have a podcast. I'd love to be on and help teach your audience something. What would be valuable for me to talk about? Or how could I be the most valuable to your audience? You're able to use those relationships to get onto a podcast, to provide value to their audience, and to start building up your repertoire of experience when it comes to podcasting. So 100% agree. Approaching the people you know already, approaching these warm referrals, that's one of the best ways to get started with the process of podcast guesting.
Even though it's still scary.
Oh, yeah.
And it will be.
It'll always be scary. Everything we do is scary. But it really does come down, I think, to how comfortable you are with your ego. And if you're able to say, you know what, this is scary. This is a little outside of my comfort zone. I'm going to do it anyways and learn from it. Like I was just at a Double Your Freelancing conference in Virginia in September, and I was invited as a speaker. And I've done public speaking before. I've done public speaking at large events in my hometown before. But this is my first time where I was like, in all capital letters, a speaker at a conference. And I was like, oh my God, this is pushing me outside of the comfort zone. I know, but I mean, the choice here is say, this is a bit too scary for me. I'm not going to do it. Or this is a bit scary. I'm okay with that. I'm excited to learn what this process is like and experience it. And by saying yes, by confronting that twinge that was like, I don't know, this is a bit scary, I was able to grow as a person and say, oh, this is actually really fun. I want to do more of these.
Right. I've been on a conference stage three times, but the first one, I landed because I actually reached out to Rob Walling to speak at MicroConf Europe.
Wonderful.
And, you know, this is like the best praise you can give to the outreach process. This is how you do this. However, I can give some advice to those who just getting started without any network. Mm-hmm. The best way to get started like in a 0-0 situation, like I did 3 years ago, I was a Russian girl in the middle of Russian countryside, knowing not a single person in the American, you know, environment. The best way is to put together your own platform and to start inviting someone as an interviewee. Mm-hmm. Because pulling people this way is much more comfortable for them. If they say no, that's okay. But most people will say yes because they love talking about themselves. And that's such a natural urge. And this way you can build, you know, you can make friends with authorities. Not because you want to make friends with authorities, but because these will be the people who you actually talk to at some point.
100%. Starting your own podcast, like we said at the beginning of the episode, it can be a lot of work, but it's a wonderful way to start building those relationships. Because when you invite somebody onto your podcast, it's very rare that they're like, oh, how many episodes do you have? Or how many listeners do you get? More often they'll say, oh yeah, I'd love to come on. This will be exciting and fun. I get to talk about the thing I love. And you're able to spend an hour with them on a phone call, on having a conversation. And from that, build a relationship, and that relationship will turn into future opportunities.
One more thing. Don't be afraid of your accent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just don't be afraid of yourself talking, no matter whether you come from the United States or anywhere else. You can just find all kinds of accents out there, and some of them will be worse than yours, some of them will be better. Some people are born native speakers, however, all of them survive, and you know, the mic will take mm-hmm. it.
And I have so much admiration for people who have English as a second language and do an amazing job podcasting. Like I think it speaks to a strength of the ego that you're willing to say, you know what, this isn't my native language, but I'm going to go out there and do these podcasts and do an amazing job doing them.
Yay, thank you. But, you know, it's very scary. Mm-hmm. At first, you feel like that chair is burning under your...
Oh, I bet.
Mm. Yeah, really.
I speak a tiny bit of Spanish, and even if I was a fluent speaker, like, I don't know if you could drag me onto a Spanish podcast. Like, I'd just be so afraid of like, oh God, I have to talk about this thing in a foreign language. So amazing amounts of kudos to people like you who are confident enough to do that. Like, that takes a strong confidence in yourself.
Right. Thank you, Kai. Anyways, I think we have just fully covered the topic of podcasting. And in the next episode, we are going to talk about email and how to write the perfect outreach email.
I'm excited.
All right, Kai. See you in the next episode.
See you in the next episode.